You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is our review of If Beale Street Could Talk.
You ready for this?
I've never been more ready for anything in my whole life. You know I love you, no matter what happens.
I'm yours in your mind, and that's it. You and me all the time.
We are drinking to new life. Tish gonna have Fonny's baby.
I hope it's a boy. Come on over here, daughter.
You're a good girl, and I'm proud of you. Don't you ever forget it.
And who's gonna be responsible for this baby?
The father and the mother.
I'm gonna hold you in my arms. I gotta hold our baby in my arms.
We'll find a way.
That child was born of sin. That child is your grandchild. What difference does it make how it gets here?
Unbow your head, sister.
We've known Bonnie all his life. He's about to pay for something he didn't do.
These are our children. And we gotta set them free.
Remember, love is what brought you here. And if you trusted love this far, don't panic now. Trust it all the way.
Just remember, be home soon.
All right, everybody, you were just listening to the trailer for If Beale Street Could Talk, and the story is as follows. In early 1970s Harlem, daughter and wife-to-be Tish vividly recalls the passion, respect, and trust that have connected her and her artist fiancé, Alonzo Hunt, who goes by the nickname Fonny. Friends since childhood, the devoted couple dream of a future together, but their plans are derailed when Fonny is arrested for a crime he did not commit. The film is starring Kiki Layne, Stephen James, Colman Domingo, Teyonah Parris, Michael Beach, Dave Franco, Diego Luna, Pedro Pascal, Ed Skrein, Brian Tyree Henry, and Regina King. It is written and directed by Barry Jenkins. Joining me for this review, I have Nicole Ackman.
Hi, everyone.
Tom O'Brien.
Hey.
And from payorwait.com, our guest this week for this review is Sharonda Williams.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Sharonda. Welcome to the show. We're happy to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I know that we're all very, very anxious to talk about Barry Jenkins' follow-up to Moonlight. Like, can we just take a moment to appreciate that sentence for a moment? This is the guy who directed the Best Picture winner of 2016. I just did a fist bump just now because I love Moonlight, and I was so, so excited to see what Barry Jenkins would do next. I had no idea what it possibly could be. And to be honest with you, when I saw the first trailer, the teaser trailer for this, I was a little taken aback because I thought that he would maybe do something a little bit more ambitious on the surface. And it looked to me like it was almost like Moonlight 2 in a sort of way. Same style, same everything. Whoa, did I turn out to be very, very wrong when I saw this movie in full then? Because what I realized is that it's more of a sprawling piece of work from a truly master filmmaker who was not just exploring a relationship between, like he did in Moonlight, with one person and the individual family members that he connected with. This is two people, each one of their family members on both sides, people they meet, and it's just a much more ambitious piece of work, but still maintaining that intimacy and that very relatable human element that we discovered in Moonlight. And I mean, for those that have seen Medicine for Melancholia too, which I know is underseen for a lot of folks out there, but man, after the 1-2 punch of Moonlight and now this, I am very, very confident in saying that Barry Jenkins is already one of the established masters of our generation and will probably, I assume, with more films to come, go down maybe even quite possibly as one of the greatest of all time. here to follow that up now, who wants to give their thoughts on if Beale Street could talk?
Oh, God.
let's hand it over to Sharonda. She is the guest here. Sharonda, simple question. What did you ultimately think of If Beale Street Could Talk?
I absolutely love this film. It was so great. When the movie just ended, I was just speechless. Couldn't even move. I was just like, what did I just witness right now?
It's so funny you say that. My written review on my website, the first line says, speechless, utterly speechless. This is how I felt after watching Barry Jenkins' follow-up film.
Yeah, it was, I mean, first to see a movie that depicts Black love, but to even depict just a realistic version of Black love and how they have to deal with society at the same time and how those issues that are happening while growing up Black in America, like how that affects your relationships and just all of the different, talking about institutionalized racism, you know, what led to like the decline or separation of Black families. It was just, I don't have enough words to say how much I really appreciated Barry developing this novel by James Baldwin onto the big screen.
Yeah, I mean, he does try to tackle, almost at times it feels like too many issues, and you almost worry while watching it that the film might lose track or maybe go in a direction that is like, oh man, you were doing so good in the first two thirds, and where did this movie seem to go? But I never got to that point with this. I mean, he is just such a focused filmmaker. He knows exactly what kind of story he wants to tell and how to tell it here. And he manages to say so much with so, so little and just the right amount in certain cases as well. And I have one scene in particular that I think crystallizes all of this. More on that in a second. Let's pass it off to Nicole now. What did you think of If Beale Street Could Talk?
So I convinced my roommate to go see this movie with me because I was like, listen, everyone seems to love this, and it's set in Harlem in the 70s, and we live in Harlem.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was like, come on, we're going to go. And I have to say, we both adored it. Like, again, it came out of it, and I was like, I don't even have the words for how beautiful that is, but there isn't a single thing I don't like in this movie. The performances are great. The story is so engaging, and it just holds you with it. The cinematography is beautiful, but, like, I am so blown away by the use of color in this film that I don't know I'll ever be over it.
Yeah, James Laxton, the cinematographer, once again, he worked on Moonlight as well. Him and Barry just have such a way of evoking mood and feeling through the use of warmth and color and tones. I mean, oh my God. Like, even just thinking about it, you could watch the trailer and get an idea. But when you're watching the two-hour movie, it's hypnotic. You get lost in it.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think also, too, like, going into, like, the use of the cinematography, there's a use of the manipulation that they have of the smoke, and it's particularly in a scene with Vanya, who's creating this, like, work of art. And you see it in the trailer a little bit as well. But I thought that was beautifully done.
Yeah, no, it definitely was, for sure. Great use of lighting. Oh, man, the way the camera just moves, like, with such fluidity. Tom, we're all gushing about it. Join the gush fest. What did you think of If Beale Street Could Talk?
Well, I know that you're really excited to hear what an overweight Irish American thinks of this. I loved it. And I'm kind of known as a grouch on this side, not the most grouchy perhaps, but good Lord, this is good. You know, I would compare it, I don't know, this, I hope this doesn't diminish it, to a warm bath.
Okay.
You know how you slip into a bathtub and it's warm and it's like, oh my God, I can just let everything go. And Barry Jenkins is so in control of all of this. And you know, God, he knows what he's doing. Let me sit back and just be enveloped by all of this wonderfulness. And it was for 2 hours.
Isn't it amazing how it's a very simple story, to be honest, I think at least. I think it's a very simple story on the surface, right?
Yes.
Two people are in love. She's going to have a kid. He gets thrown in jail. How are we going to take care of the kid? What's going to happen? Okay.
Yeah.
But there is a backdrop and a setting and a time and place, 1970s, New York, and the racial tones of their the color of their skin dictating everything that is happening in their lives. The fact that he is in jail for a crime that he did not commit because of the color of his skin. And this just creates like a domino effect of so many like different issues get touched upon in this movie. All through what is honestly just a very nice family just looking for a simple, nice, and comfortable life. I think it's just a masterstroke of brilliance that, and it's sad too, that here is a family that, or a family that is about to become a newer family with this newborn coming along the way.
Yeah.
And the American dream, what you know, a promise of a new life, whatever you want to call it, it's always a struggle. And they can't even have, it's like one of those things where it's like, nobody can have nice things. It's like, why can't these two characters just have nice things? You know, because they're so beautiful together and they really love one another. And we as an audience are rooting for them to stay together. I mean, it's a crime. It's a crime what happens to them in this movie, and you get angry thinking about it, and you get filled with hope when you think that they're going to find a way to overcome it. And I the amount of just empathy that Barry Jenkins is able to draw from his audience for these characters, like I mean, I'm really sorry for anyone that's listening right now if like we're going to just sound like we're, you know, just praising this movie to high heaven. But we're going to praise this movie to high heaven. There's just no way around it.
Yeah.
Because this is one of the most emotional and involving experiences I've had at the cinema this year. And it's not just because of the story and how brilliant it is that it takes, like I said, what on the surface is very simple, but weaves a complex message through its simplicity. But there's also great editing, there's great performances, great cinematography, the score by Nicholas Britell.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that for a second.
Oh my Lord.
This score is, I think, one of the most unique ones this year, in that I feel like sometimes film scores can be a bit formulaic. And this one, there were times where I was like, why am I nervous? What is making me, oh, okay, it's the score making me nervous right now. That's great. Like, well done.
Well, I mean, his score for Moonlight was, you know, they used something called like a technique called chopped and screwed, where they would take the instruments and like do. Honestly, I you know what? I can't even begin to explain it. I'm not a musician. I do have an interview with Nicholas Britell talking about the music in Moonlight on the podcast, if anyone's ever interested in hearing more in detail about it. But they employ some of those elements here again. But this one just had so much more of a It had so much more of a feeling of the period with the jazz influence in the score, you know,
mm-hmm.
and not so much like jazz, like fun jazz, more like slow,
right.
Like nightclub jazz.
I think I may have mentioned in a previous podcast that I just wanted to go back to see it, closing my eyes and just listening to it. It's gorgeous.
I mean, who doesn't want the soothing voice of Regina King telling you, baby, it's going to be okay?
I want that as my alarm in the morning.
Which brings me to the cast. So I'm actually curious, like who, this is, I mean, this is Kiki Layne and Stephen James' story, yes. But this is definitely a large ensemble cast film, in my opinion. I mean, they're the main characters, but I do really feel that the ensemble is very well balanced and everybody gets a moment to shine. Does anyone have an MVP or anyone in particular in the cast that they want to single out?
I think that one of my favorites, who I do not feel is getting enough shine for his role in this film, would have to be Brian Tyree Henry, yeah. Paige Daniel. There is,
yes!
Like, there is a scene in the movie where him and Vani, they're having a conversation where he's talking about his experiences for being, you know, convicted of a crime that he didn't commit, and kind of he goes into like the psychological impacts of him being in prison. First of all, you're in prison and you're innocent, and then you're still a black man in prison. So you still have to go through the same things you were going through, but elevated times 100, because you're looked at like this criminal. And I just felt so bad for him. I was just like, oh my gosh, like you hurt with him. And then it makes you even more scared for the life that Fonny could potentially have. And I just really wish he would get more shine for that role. I know it was small, but it was so impactful.
It reminded me, honestly, of those kind of like one scene wonders from like Beatrice Straight, like in Network.
Yep.
Where she wins the Oscar for just one scene only. And that scene from Brian Tyree Henry, that was the scene I was alluding to before when I said it just touches upon so much in such a short period of time. And it's like the whole tone of the movie changes during that monologue. It was soul shattering.
Yeah.
Listening to him, honestly, like, he goes from like being very cheerful with like with his friend to being then very it was a mixture of so many emotions. Like, he was down, he was scared, he was traumatized, he also was stern in like telling Fonny about the dangers of it all. I mean, like, that knocked me out. I mean, that's one of my top, if not, man, I don't know. I got to take time to think about this, but top three best scenes I've seen in a movie this year by far.
Yeah. Sharonda, you're so right about that, singling him out, because the film had been going along. I've been appreciating it. And then he hit that monologue and it was like, wow, geez, this really is something. And he's been nominated for the Tony this year, nominated for the Emmy this year. God, Academy, wake up and just notice this performance. It's remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's even the more remarkable that he conveys so much, not just about his character, but about the issues that Barry Jenkins is looking to touch upon through his screenplay in such a short amount of time. Like, that just takes real skill from any actor to leave such an indelible impression upon its audience.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Regina King. We touched upon her a little bit. Can we talk about this scene? The scene in the living room with the families.
Oh God!
The amount of zingers that are just thrown out as shade in the screenplay. My Lord, I was not expecting the laughter in this movie. But there were some lines in here that, you know, when they were delivered by King or anyone else, like in that scene in particular, I was like, whoo. Oh, man. I was like, wow, I wasn't expecting this movie to have a bit of fire to it. But, ooh, you know,
I love the super vocal reactions from everyone in the movie theater during that scene.
I think one of the important things that also stuck out to me in that scene was the relationship between Tish and her dad. Because yes. She had this big secret to reveal to the family, and everyone's kind of looking to him to determine, like, what is this move going to be? And I think that's one of the first times we really see a father, you know, really just be like, it's okay, I'm happy, like, we're celebrating. And so I thought that was so important to see a father-daughter relationship as it was portrayed in this movie, but to see it in a joyous way, a father really supporting his daughter no matter what.
I never would have imagined that the side characters, the characters that I wasn't expecting from like the marketing or anything, like Brian Tyree Henry, like Coleman Domingo, who plays Joseph Rivers in this, her father, like you said, I wasn't expecting those characters to emerge with such brilliant writing that really crystallized for us who these people were and what their morals were, what they stood for. I mean, God, like, I want to sign a petition for Barry Jenkins to just write dialogue for like every character in every movie, you know? Because I think he just brings such a level of depth to every character, no matter how small. Even freaking the most distracting scene in the movie with Dave Franco, which I cringed at first when he came on screen.
I was like, whoa.
But that scene slowly, by the time it was over, emerged once again, through the quality of Barry's writing and what he gives each character in even such a short amount of time, in some cases with one scene, I'm speechless. What, speechless.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a tiny role, but I loved seeing Diego Luna as the friend of Fonny's, who works in the restaurant or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that scene where, I love the scene where they're in the restaurant, and it's in the flashback to kind of earlier in Fonny and Tisha's relationship, and she sees him speaking Spanish with this, you know, other guy, and there's this moment of realization that he has a life outside of what she knows of him. And I thought that was one of the most poignant scenes for me in the whole thing. And I have to say, like, Kiki Layne, I don't feel like is getting enough credit for how great she is in this film.
No,
first
not at all.
I want her to narrate my whole life. Because she has the nicest voice. And I thought that the narration throughout the film in parts was so nicely done. But also, she is so amazing in this. And obviously, Regina King is great, and, you know, there's a lot of great performances in it, but I feel like in some ways she's actually getting overlooked.
Yeah, I agree. And can I just give a shout out to Tiona Paris, as this is, oh God, she's so good. I would want to see a movie about her.
Yeah.
She just seemed to intimate that there is a separate life here that she is living. And it's, you know, we only see her in terms of this particular story, but God, she's wonderful.
And I want to ask everyone here, and I don't want to get into like Oscar potential or anything like that right now, but Regina King has been doing really, really well amongst the critical community so far this award season. She's won more acting prizes this year than any other actor so far on the circuit for Best Supporting Actress. And I want to touch upon the performance that she gives in this, because when I saw it, I was waiting throughout the whole movie for, okay, what's the scene that seals the deal? Like, what is it that's got everybody so crazed about her performance in this, you know? Yeah. And it's not until we get to the third act where Regina King takes over a section of the movie that it's like, ah, okay, this is this is where the hype now, you know, this is where it all is. Okay, I get it. And she has a scene, man, in that alleyway that, I mean, there's a number of times in this movie where I felt uplifted. There were a number of times in this movie where I felt filled with joy, hope, warmth. And then there were scenes like with Brian Tyree Henry and then her in that alleyway where my soul was just shattered into 1,000 pieces.
Exactly.
Oh.
Can we also, though, talk about her scene with the wig?
Yes.
Yes.
Because it's this beautiful scene with no dialogue, and yet she expresses so much in it. That, like, I didn't know that that was possible.
She and everybody else in this cast have an ability through Jenkins' direction, through the writing, through their abilities as actors. It's just such a, it's one of those movies where every single piece perfectly fits in the puzzle. And there's not one single moment where you say to yourself, okay, this element is off and that's what's making me, you know, tired during this moment or checking my watch or pulls me out of the movie. You know, like, I'm going to just spoil it for everyone right now. This is a 10 out of 10 movie for me because I can't think of a single flaw with this movie. I really can't, because I was just enraptured by it the entire time while I was watching it. The pacing moved along. I was invested in this story. I thought it was a beautiful story. It touched upon many grand issues that, honestly, it's one of those things too where it doesn't try to touch upon so much so that, you know, you're left wondering at the end of the movie, well, the movie didn't give us any logical conclusions to any of this or anything. You know, it's not like they bit off more than it could chew, you know? It bit off just the right amount, and it was able to get you at least thinking about, the Black experience, in a way that hopefully, I mean, I'm speaking, you know, from the white perspective here. Maybe you haven't, you know, thought of it like this before, because let's put it this way. I think that a lot of times when the Black experience is portrayed in cinema, I think it's a lot of times portrayed in a horrific manner. in a, you know, whether it's dealing with crime or if it's dealing with drugs or, you know, just something for dramatic effect, you know, and it sometimes just gets overplayed and it could be sometimes more damaging than it can be uplifting and beautiful. And I think what Barry is doing with this is he's saying, nah, man, there's good and there's bad. And this is a movie that I want to show everyone the best of the best. And I want to show that even despite their efforts to have the best, that it's a hard world and it's still preventing them from achieving that happiness. And that's life. That's life for everyone, in a certain, to a certain degree or another. You know, everybody has ups and downs through this wacky process we call life. And here he's telling a story that is very, very focused on a very particular couple's life. And we're just along for the ride.
And I think just to piggyback off of that, I think that's why the ending of this film was so important to me. And it was so profound to me because whereas, you know, the average moviegoer going to see this, they might not feel as though like, hey, this is not a happy ending. Nothing was really resolved. They're kind of stuck in like basically having to pay for something that he never committed, you know? And so I feel like the ending was so profound because it shows like that is the Black experience. The fact that you have these bad things that happen to you and you know that there is cards that are set against you just from a societal perspective, and you still have to rise above and continue living your life. And make the best of it.
There's a strength and dignity in that that I think is very empowering and can be very influential and can give people courage, give them hope. Barry needs to make movies for as long as humanly possible. We need to find a way to get Barry to live to be 200 years old. I want this man to keep making movies forever. I really do. I thought Moonlight was such an accomplishment when I saw it, and I was not expecting that movie. I mean, that movie came out of nowhere for a lot of us. Yeah. You know, nobody was expecting that movie to be what it was. And it's a Best Picture winner. Like that, I still got to pinch myself every time I say that because it's just too good to be true. It's one of the best Picture winners ever. This is honestly... I think I might have even said it in my written review. I'm not sure, but I kind of felt it after I walked out of it initially. I wasn't sure if I liked it more or less than Moonlight or if it was the same. I definitely know it's not less. I don't know if it's more. I'm very comfortable in saying it's the same, and that's okay because I love both of these movies.
Yeah, it just frustrates me when we talk about Oscar stuff. Why is this not in the conversation more?
Why is it not resonating? Yeah. Okay. This is good. So normally what I'd like to do now is this. Before we get to the Oscar conversation, I want everyone to give their grades out of 10. And then if there's anything that we didn't touch upon that you want to talk about, feel free to mention that now. Sharonda, you are the guest here. Let's start off with you.
So much pressure. No, for me, this is definitely a 10 out of 10, but I really want to talk more about the scene between Regina King and Emily Rios, because there was so much happening in that scene, and I think a lot of people resonated with Regina King's character as she's trying to fight, you know, for her family, you know, but on the other end, I don't know if people really resonated with Emily Rios's character, Victoria, and kind of what she was going through as well. You're this victim of rape. You don't really know, you know, who's responsible for what, and you're also being pressured by the police as well. It's kind of like these two characters are stuck in these predicaments and their backs are against the wall. There's nothing that can really be done on either side. And as much as you want to necessarily hate her character, hate Victoria's character, you kind of still understand what she's going through as well. And so that's why I think that that scene is so powerful for so many reasons on both sides. I just thought that that was one of my favorite scenes in the film.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where try as hard as you may to do the right thing, to do the thing that you need to get done so badly that the very thought of not succeeding could mean the end of your entire world as you know it. And for somebody to, I hope I'm not giving a spoiler here, but for somebody to be...
Oh, I'm so sorry. I did give a spoiler.
No, it's okay. I think it's important. to talk about this. For someone to have apprehension in and have a unwillingness to want to help you when you're that desperate, there's a certain level of acceptance here that is so hard to find. I think as a third party, as an audience, right? We watch that scene. And like you said, I think it is very easy for us to understand where she's coming from. Emily Rios's character in this, Victoria Rogers. But I think if we were all in Regina King's position that she finds herself in the moment, that is so hard to accept. Mm-hmm. How do you accept that? I can't even imagine the moral dilemma. I can't. Because on one hand, you know she's a good person. You know she wants to be respectful. And you know that she wants to go about this really, really difficult conversation in a way that maintains the other side's dignity. But, man. Oh, that is... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Got me thinking about the whole movie now. Jeez Louise. All right. So 10 out of 10 from you. Tom?
Well, I don't give 10s.
Uh-oh, but...
as you know, Matt, mm-hmm. but boy, this is a very strong 9 for me.
Okay. All right. Is it because there is something about it, like flaw-wise, even if it's minuscule, or you just don't give 10s?
I don't mean to knock the film because it's not a knockable film. It somehow, the very few films I've given 10s to, and the last time I gave one was 2015, that shook me to my core. This one, I kind of stepped back a little bit and began to appreciate it for all of the, how Barry Jenkins made this cinematic. Because there are, for example, the living room scene mm-hmm. Could have been a play.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I would have seen that play in, anywhere. But he made it cinematic. And that's the achievement, I think, of it. So it's as close to a 10 as I can get, but I'm just stubborn.
Okay. All right. That's fine. No peer pressure here. Nicole?
Yeah, I was teetering kind of between a 9 and a 10 on this, and I finally went with a 9, but a really strong 9, kind of like Tom's. Not that there's necessarily anything that I would, that I would knock about the film. I do think that at times it can kind of feel like, okay, is this going to be too much? Like, there's so many things going on, but it doesn't quite end up being too much. But I did want to say one other thing before we finish up, which is that the costuming in this film is so lovely. The cinema that I saw it at had a couple of the costumes up in the window display. And so going in, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to love this. But every outfit, especially the outfits that they have on Tish, is just gorgeous. And the way that they light the colors of the outfits, I just was blown away by that. So I had to put that out there too, especially because I don't typically like 70s costuming, but I thought that this was really beautiful.
All right. I already gave my grade 10 out of 10. I don't have any other final thoughts to talk about other than it's Oscar thoughts. So what is going on with this movie? Missed a Golden Globe nomination for Barry Jenkins and director. Regina King does not get in at SAG. Hell, nobody gets in at SAG. Doesn't get a SAG Ensemble nomination. We are in the heart of award season right now, and one of the best films of the year is starting to lose steam with certain groups. Why is this film vulnerable? What is going on? I kind of want to hear it from Tom. I feel like you know the answer, or at least maybe you're close to knowing the answer. I don't know, but I mean, I'm sure you've thought about this. What's going on with Beale Street in the Oscar race right now?
It's so frustrating. Yes, there are great films out there, but this is a great film too, and the Regina King snub from SAG just baffled me. Because it just, I see it as being contenders in 6 categories: picture, supporting actress, director, adapted screenplay, cinematography, and score. And
yeah, I originally thought it could contend for things like editing and costumes, but
yeah,
it's not an across the board contender, sadly, like Moonlight was, because it doesn't look like it is contending to be one of the top three Oscar movies in the fight for the Best Picture prize. It looks like it is one of the also ran Best Picture nominees this year. So yeah, I have it missing in a few other categories too. But go on.
No. It's just very frustrating. You know, it doesn't happen all that often, but when you see a film of this caliber being ignored in the award season, it just wants to, come on, watch this movie. And I don't know whether they are or not, but boy, if they do, they really should step up and get this nominated in various guilds.
I have no doubt that it's going to get a Best Picture nomination. I honestly, I know some people are saying, oh, it's vulnerable and it could miss entirely. I personally don't think so. I think it's in there no matter what. Barry, yeah, there was a time where Barry was my winner. I thought they were going to make up Moonlight to him and give him Best Director, and he'd become the first black director to ever win Best Director. Now it's starting to look like Spike Lee will be that person, which is fine, you know. But what's really amazing to me is when you listen to Barry talk about this movie in interviews or at any Q&As, he has such an unbelievable way of selling his movie to his audience.
Unbelievable.
I feel like he's a magician and he just puts a spell underneath me and I'm just like, yes, 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 your movie is great. Oh my God, I love you. I just want to give you all the awards. You know?
Well, it, for me at least, Spike's film is intellectually stimulating. This film is emotionally stimulating.
Interesting. What do you think, Sharonda?
I don't know. I was very sad to see if Bill Street Could Talk left out of some of these awards, most importantly, Best Director. And I think it's frustrating because you finally have a movie where you feel as though, for me as an African-American, where you feel as though this like shows the true black experience and this shows positive black families, you know, especially when a lot of the movies that have black subject matters are either about slavery or some type of stereotype. And it's just really unfortunate. And especially if I'm going to compare this to a movie like Green Book, which everyone loves and is getting so much praise. And it's just like, these are the stories that we are trying to get away from. And it almost feels as though we're still stuck in the same mindset where we can only be recognized more so for our pain of what we had to go through instead of the beauty of the black experience as well. And so it's just really unfortunate.
I think we're definitely in a transitional period for sure, where I think a movie like Green Book in the 80s or 90s would have been nominated over this. Like, this wouldn't be nominated at all. But I think we're in a transitional period where there is definitely a generational thing, I think, with Green Book. And that's why a film like that is still being considered. But movies like If Beale Street Could Talk, for example, a small independent film, black experience, like you said, that probably would not... I would venture to guess not get a Best Picture nomination in the 80s or maybe the 90s. I mean,
definitely not. No.
Yeah, so the fact that it is, at least, like I said, I am very confident it's going to get the Best Picture nomination. I think we're just in a transitional period. You know what I mean? We're stuck between two generations right now of new films like this with progressive ideas and a new way of looking at cinema is coming in. And then we have old nostalgic stuff that reminds us of what film was like back in those early, you know, in those times during the 80s and things like that, like Rain Man or Driving Miss Daisy or whatever. At the end of the day, I'm happy that we got another cinematic masterpiece from Barry, whether it gets awards attention or not. I think it deserves all the awards attention. If it were up to me, I would have Barry win. I would have Regina King win. I'd have Nicholas Britell win. I love the cinematography in Roma. Don't get me wrong, but James Laxton, man, you know he's gonna win someday for something. Cause if he just keeps doing work like this with Barry, man, like it's unbelievable to me. With that said, I mean, I'm glad that it's in the awards conversation. I think it will continue to still be in the awards conversation. And if it doesn't get everything it should get, I'll be happy at least if it gets the Best Picture nomination. If it does not get a Best Picture nomination and I turn out to be wrong, I give everyone approval to set pitchforks on fire and take to the streets because we shall not stand for this movie to not be a Best Picture nominee. It is too good to not be. It's just too good.
I'm confident that, you know, 10 years from now, people are going to look at Green Book the way they look at Driving Miss Daisy. Why? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this film will shine.
For sure. And I mean, not just against movies that deal with race like Green Book too, but I would stack this up there with any other movie I've seen in 2018 as well. That, like, I think, let me think about this for one quick second. Hold on. I think this is my second favorite film of the year. I'm pretty sure this is my second favorite film of the year. I know it's in my top three.
I think that one thing that is hurting this film in some ways is that it's not as flashy as some of the films that we have out this year, like A Star is Born or The Favorite, or some things like that. That.
So you think like the small, not small, but like the intimate, mm-hmm, story, like the idea, like I was saying before, on the surface this movie looks small,
yeah,
but I mean underneath everything it's got a lot of ideas.
Yeah, no, I think that it is flashy in many ways, but not in the ways that I'm struggling with what I'm trying to say, but it's not, you know, A Star is Born has the whole thing of being directed by Bradley Cooper and it's Lady Gaga's acting debut and all that, and obviously The Favorite has so much hype. It's a huge scale period drama, an LGBT period drama, which is huge. You know, and there are other movies, even something like BlacKkKlansman is so radical in some ways that I feel like they're getting talked about more than this, perhaps. Even though I would venture to say that this is a superior film to some of them, particularly in terms of craft, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a real shame that it may get overlooked because in many ways it is a family drama.
Yeah.
And I think that may be part of why it's getting pushed to the side a little bit. But I actually am hoping for the same six that Tom said in terms of categories for it to get into, because that's kind of what I'm looking for on a nominations day, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I am as well. Those six, I think its worst day is four, and I think it's probable day is five. So we'll see what ends up happening. Does anyone have any final thoughts before we go?
Please see this movie.
Yeah, I love when Tom adds that at the end. the passionate plea from Tom to see the movie. I love it. I echo that. Please see this movie. I know it's going to be a small release. I know there are flashier films out over the Christmas holiday. I still do not understand why Annapurna moved the release to now. It makes zero sense to me. I really do feel like I don't know why. I really don't. I think after its premiere at TIFF and at NYFF, and the momentum was there, and they just needed to stick to their November release date. And if they had done that, I think this film would be playing so much better in the awards conversation, box office. Now, I fear it is going to get lost in the shuffle when it does release wider.
I think it's a fairly good, if you're looking to go to a movie with your parents, I actually think this is a decent choice over something perhaps like The Favorite. So that's my endorsement for Christmas movie viewing.
Yeah, I can get down with that. I see where you're going with that.
Yeah, I just think it's really tough. I don't know if the timing, if they didn't want it to necessarily compete with the Thanksgiving movies, but it's also competing with another one of their films, Vice, which is getting a lot of Oscar buzz.
And Destroyer.
Yes.
Right.
So I don't.
All three of them.
And then you have the 15 million movies that's coming out on Friday. So I don't know what the strategy was behind this, but I hope that they can overcome.
I hope so, too. I genuinely do. I mean, right now in the awards conversation, there's no other film I'm actually fighting for harder overall film than this one. to just get ahead a little bit more than what it is. Because like I said, Barry missing a Critics' Choice, Golden Globe and director. I don't know what's going on there. And then the SAG thing and the warning signs are going off and I don't like it, you know? So we all need to band together and we all need to, you know, get the word out there that Beale Street is, or let me get the correct title. If Beale Street Could Talk, it's not just called Beale Street. If Beale Street Could Talk is a movie that's worth seeing, see it. With that said, Sharonda, thank you so much for gracing us with your presence here on this podcast review. You were such a pleasure to have on. Tell everybody that's listening where they can find you on the internet.
You can find me at payorwait.com and also too on YouTube. Payorwait. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, we really appreciate having you as well. Thank you so much. And Tom, where can they find you?
You can see me blab on at Thomas E. O'Brien.
Nicole?
I am consistently talking about theater, film, and memes at NicoleAckman16 on Twitter.
And you can find me at Next Best Picture. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to our review of If Beale Street Could Talk here on the Next Best Picture podcast. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, Acast, CastBox, and newly on Spotify. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review there. Let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback. It also helps us to get discovered, which is really nice. And if you're feeling generous after that, head on over to Patreon. $1. It only takes one to get podcast content from us as exclusive to you. Thank you so much for listening, as always. We shall see you all next time.